Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
This is the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, and the Keystone Sports app. Dustin Hockensmith and Greg Pickle here talking Penn State football, coming to you from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. We've got a couple good topics for you this week. Number one, which we're going to tackle in just a moment, we're going to continue our re-ranking series of the 2016 recruiting class. We did the 2015 class last week. If you didn't catch that live, you can catch that at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com and by downloading the Keystone Sports app. So we'll focus on 2016. These two classes in particular, 15 and 16, make up the veteran core of the Penn State roster in 2019. I know it's a young team, but these are the guys who have been around for a while, and you can kind of see the results of these classes more so than the others about success rate when it comes to signing a recruiting class. And sometimes it's a sobering reminder that not all these guys are going to work out. You're going to miss at a higher percentage than it feels like on National Signing Day. I will say that. We're also going to get into the blue-white game, give a little primer for the offensive side of the ball, for the defensive side of the ball, really more or less just coming down to what are we looking for? Who are the names to circle? What is left to be proven in a glorified scrimmage? Not even a glorified scrimmage. It just is a scrimmage at Beaver Stadium. So sometimes it's overblown what you think you're going to learn.
Right.
But there are names that are worth watching just to look for their core physical attributes, right? So I don't think you're always looking for who's got a lot of yardage, because that's not an indicator of success. What you're looking for is, how do these guys' physical skills translate on the field of play? It's a good chance to see them for the first time, and maybe ever, in the case of some of these freshmen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the blue-white game every year, you have to sort of, again, when and if the rosters work out in such a way that there's actually some 2v3 and some 1v2, 1v3, it's good. But when, you know, the last couple of years, it's been so stacked one way that it just, it really loses a lot of value, quite frankly. You know, you can learn a lot about some of the younger guys on the team that's not stacked, and maybe if they make a few big plays, you can project that, you know, one way or the other. But really, it's just, I find it difficult to take a lot out of it. I think what happened, the conversations that happen after the game are much more telling about what's going to happen in the future than anything we see on the field. And if you listen to Monday's show, one of the questions we had was about rain in the forecast, which I didn't even think of, but that will cause even more of a problem, undoubtedly, this year.
Not even necessarily on game day. The question that came up was, if there's rain leading up, it's going to limit the tailgating experience on the grass lots, and
right,
it's going to become an issue just like it was last year. So the whole grass lot issue, we could get a reminder of that storyline coming up this weekend.
Yeah, and you know, not to completely go off topic here, but
it's too late.
Yeah, it's kind of already happened, right? I mean, there's not an easy fix, and I know a lot of fans want there to be an easy fix. Well, why don't you just pave it all? But if you spend any time in State College in the off season, you'll see those fields being used either by livestock or by people playing intramural sports, or you know, things that have nothing to do with seven home football games a year. And unfortunately, that is one of the university's biggest money makers. There's no question, and you can make an argument that everything around the stadium should be catered to it, not the, you know, the not weighed against other university experiences. But at the end of the day, that's not what Penn State's going to do. That's not how they're going to handle it. So it's, you just got to hope that it's not a rainy fall again. We're due for a dry summer and fall, man. It's
been
a while.
Greg?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Let's talk about the recruiting classes, and there's going to be plenty of time to get into the ins and outs of blue-white, not discussing the weather. So the 2016 class, I would say this class, uncertainty towards the end of it, there wasn't a strong finish, and this was one of the early times in James Franklin's tenure. Remember, coming off that 2015 season, there were just a lot of doubts all around. There were staff changes. There was a bad finish to the year. It was one of the low points for James Franklin, and they ended up in this class getting a bunch of Plan B and C guys late in the cycle. And unlike the 2015 class, where these Plan B guys, they connected at a really high rate.
Yeah.
And really high rate, like an abnormal rate of success with guys like Nick Bowers and Kevin Givens. Tommy Stevens was on the late side. Sharif Miller was on the late side of that 15 class. In 2016, you had guys like Daylon Darien, Brennan Thrift, TJ Johnson, guys who aren't even around anymore. So you have, I guess, a reminder as you're getting your plan B guys, you know, it's always a gamble.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, that sort of goes back to the whole question of why is Penn State offering 3-star recruits right now? Why are they, you know, not just off waiting out the 4- and 5-star recruits? Well, guess what? You need to have plan B and C and whatnot in recruiting because ultimately you're not going to hit on all your plan A guys. You're not going to hit on all your plan B guys. So you better have some options lined up. That was a good example of a class that needed to have them lined up.
So this class too, just like the 15 class, there were a good number of transfers, which I guess we're going layer by layer, one class at a time.
It's going to get worse and worse.
It is going to get worse and worse. Absolutely. Daylon Darien, TJ Johnson transferred pretty early. Brennan Thrift was a JUCO guy. He's at West Virginia now. Alex Gellerstedt was a little bit of a surprise as a transfer offensive tackle because we thought maybe 2019 was going to be the year for him. Alex Barbier, he moved on. I don't even think he's playing. He's at Liberty University, I think, but I don't even think he's playing. So Danny Dalton was another transfer. Jake Zembeck was a guy who injuries really stopped his career before he even got a chance to get started. Zach McPherson, the cornerback, we don't know yet where he's going, but he's in the transfer portal too. So you have a real good chunk of this class who is either on the move now or has already moved on. So the number of guys left isn't that high. And you're right, it's going to get worse.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. It's the way that college football is going at this point. I mean, we're not at a legal free agency point quite yet, Dustin, but we're probably not too far away from it.
And as we mentioned before, this is the class that should, in a lot of cases, have graduated within 3 or 3.5 years and can move on without that penalty. They can move on as grad transfers. They're not sitting out any time. This is what Penn State wants to do. So I would suspect we're going to have the same conversation about the 17 class this time next spring. So I would say as a whole, there was a pretty good connection rate in the upper half of the class, but I don't know that some of the key guys in this class, I don't know that they've met expectations yet. Expectations were high. And a couple of them, Miles Sanders was the number one player in this class, one of the best running backs in the country. He didn't get a chance to do it until his junior year, but when he got on the field and was the featured back, he was everything that you hoped he would be, probably a little bit more. But you look at the earliest part of his career, ball security stuff, and the limited trust the staff had in him as a freshman kept his role in check. Plus, Penn State didn't do anything that didn't run through Saquon Barkley a lot of that time. Right. So he didn't get many opportunities, but I think you can definitely say he fulfilled expectations. Next up, Michael Mennett will be in his second year as a starter. He can make the leap into being a real stud, one of the nation's best centers, is the hope. Shane Simmons, injuries last season, haven't seen much of him this spring. If he gets healthy, there's still a chance to fulfill his expectations. And if you remember going back to that 16 class, Simmons was a guy who started out higher regard from recruiting services, but faded a little bit towards the end. I think functional playing strength was something that came up in those camp settings, like the opening, the Under Armour game, just didn't really hold up his end of that 5-star bargain because he had a chance to be that. If he would have done more with those opportunities on a national scale late, he would have been there. Ellison Jordan is another guy. Injuries have prevented him from really doing much. He's a wild card in that defensive tackle rotation, a guy you're not really counting on, but maybe if things go well, he can change the complexion of that depth chart.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, let's start with, I guess we'll start with Jordan and work our way back just real quick on some of the things you just mentioned. I know we don't have had a lot of time to go guy by guy, but Jordan, I think, if he could ever stay healthy, he's shown some flashes, but he just can't so far stay healthy. And that's been Simmons' problem too. He's dinged up and hasn't been able to get on the field as much as he would have liked to. And look, you can't you just can't miss so much practice time at this level. That was the thing with Michael Bennett that ties together nicely, where he missed some practices earlier in his career. But Dustin, as he got consistent both in his play and his health, he really took a lot of nice and next steps forward, and that sort of changed the outlook of his career.
And guys we didn't really even get into at a lot of depth because they didn't fit in that, like, hasn't met expectations category. Connor McGovern, who I think absolutely did. You can nitpick his game. You can say that physically he should have been a more dominant player. That's fair, I guess. But he has the look of a guy who's going to play a decade at the next level. I think he's done his job at center and guard. Daniel Joseph is another part of that defensive end rotation that has a chance to do some good things this year. And maybe his role will grow, especially if Shane Simmons isn't able to get on the field. Cam Brown will be one of the leaders of the Penn State defense, if not the captain of the Penn State defense. He's a guy that I had pegged wrong, I guess, from the beginning. There was a debate early. Shaka Toney and Cam Brown, they're both pretty comparable frame-wise to each other. I thought Cam Brown was the defensive end, and I thought Shaka Toney was the linebacker.
Right.
And it took a little bit of time, but Cam Brown is playing like a linebacker. Physical, rangy, versatile. Shaka Toney with that first step, the hope is he can maybe be a true breakout guy. Like, he's had big moments, but not for four quarters, not for a 12 or 13 game schedule. But I think it's fair to say, with a lot of hindsight, that James Franklin was right to put these guys where he put them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, the big thing with Shaka Toney, again, is will he be able to keep the weight on? That's always been the question.
Yeah.
And if he can, I mean, we've seen some really nice things from him in spring ball that makes me think two things. One, the weight's on and it's going to stay on. Same thing with Cam Brown. Weight's on and it's going to stay on after a few years of both of those guys struggling to keep the weight on. But then number two, Dustin, is if he doesn't take a next step forward, it's a little bit dicey at end in 2019 for Penn State.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. James Franklin has raved about his defensive ends several of them are key players in this 2016 class who are getting their turns now. You're looking at Shane Simmons, Daniel Joseph, Shaka Toney. It can be a fine line sometimes, but I know James Franklin loves his ends, and I think that they can be disruptive. You want to see Daniel Joseph's role grow. You want to see Shaka Toney go from that sort of third down specialist to somebody who can maybe play every down. So we'll see what happens. We're going to look at this class more as a whole and re-rank them. I also want to get into a couple of these other guys in this class who have big seasons ahead, guys who have maybe done it on a small scale. Now Penn State needs them to do it on a larger scale. So we'll tackle all that and probably a little bit more coming up after this.
It's time to get undomesticated. It's time for Labatt Blue. Time to get off the couch and on the beach, on the trails, on the lake, onto what you love doing best. Get in touch with your adventurous side. Get out the ATV, the tent, the sunscreen. Get out the cooler and fill it high with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, because nothing goes better with the great outdoors. It's time to get up, get out, get undomesticated. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. Go PSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to gopsurv.com and reserve your RV today. Hey, Dustin Hawkinsmith here from the Keystone Sports Network. I wanted to share my own firsthand experience using 409 tailgate sauce. It's a product you hear about often on the Keystone Kickoff Show. This is not an advertisement. It is a fact. 409 tailgate sauce is different from every barbecue sauce I have ever bought. It's not that thick, syrupy, artificial stuff you'll find on grocery store shelves. It's lighter, it's more versatile, and it's good on just about everything. I'd recommend going to 409tailgateclub.com right now. See what I mean, experience that difference, and tailgate with honor.